So the impetus for this piece is that we say in Al Nisim that the goal of the Ivanim was the Habiram. It says that Hashkichem Torah Sechol, the Habiram Echul Kevet Zonecho. So the simple understanding, the standard understanding, is that that Yavan, with its philosophy of that man is the apex of creation, and that the human mind is the greatest thing that there is, and whatever can be understood by the human mind is true and real, and what is not is not. So the idea of chukim, which are unintelligible to man, is something which they had great difficulty with. So there was l'hashkichem Torah Secha, and specifically l'habirom echukei ritzonecho. Specifically, out of all the types of mitzvahs, they tried to undermine Kleisel's keeping of the chukim. That's a simple understanding. Rav Hirsch has an approach to understanding about the chukim, which I think is very, very. There's a lot of tremendous amount of insight into it. And I think it'll give us a little bit of a different insight into what exactly the Ivanim were grappling with. So, the first page over here is from the table of contents of the Sefer Charev. So, Hirsch wrote a work called Charev, and the purpose of Charev was to go through the Targum Mitzvahs. And one of Hirsch's, I think, contributions to the understanding of the Targum Mitzvahs was that each one of the mitzvahs has a message. There's a symbolism in every one of the mitzvahs. And he divides, even the chukim have a message. That's Aleph. Why that's true and why that's acceptable understanding what the word chukim are, we'll get to. He divides the mitzvahs into six sections, six types of mitzvahs. We're familiar with chukim mishpatim. He has. And we're familiar with some people. There's Eidos, right? The Ben Chochem asked the father. So there's Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim. So he has certain things which he refers to as mitzvahs, and certain things he refers to as Torahs. So he has, but specifically Chukim, he put together our laws of righteousness towards those beings which are subordinate to man. Towards earth, plant, animal, towards one owns body, mind, spirit, and word. So if you look under what he includes under the chukim, are the respecting of all beings as Hashem's property, regarding the species as divine order, respect for the feelings and instincts of animals, human corpse, one owns body, which is suicide, self-injury, self-ruin, self-preservation, hair trimming of clothing, znus, erva, immorality, food, vows, binding oath, and the idea of rife. So that's what he includes into the chukim. Now, why is that? How are these a key of chukim specifically? Why is this translation of chukim as laws of righteousness towards those beings which are subordinate to man? Why is that a valid translation? So before we go to the first example of that, which I think will help us a little clearer, there should be. If you'll move to the page, it says page 171 on the top. It's like six pages in. Or five pages in. Something of that sort. Mm-hmm. So, Rav Hirsch wrote a sefer called The 19 Letters. It was written as it was a correspondence. It was a fictitious correspondence between a rabbi and a young man who was searching to understand Yiddishkeit. He wrote his introduction to Charev. It was a tremendously popular work, and it actually was a very, very powerful work. It brought a lot of out of all the works that he wrote, he felt that the 19 Letters was the one which was going to bring people back to to Yiddishkeit, to be mishar mitar mitzvahs. Germany in general had really drifted away tremendously from Shemir Torah Mitzvahs, and the 19 letters was what he felt was going the vehicle to bring them back, and he wrote it as introduction to Charev, and that's how he proceeded. It wasn't officially written as introduction, it was written that there was a time lapse between the two swarm. It's translated from the German, and the old version of it is about maybe a third of the size of this book. But Rabbi Yosef Elias, who was a Yekka, who was also the head of the seminary for embroiderers for the girls, the tremendous Talmud Chacham himself, but also very, very, very learned in the Hirsch's writings as being a Yekka, he did a new translation along with a commentary. And these are his notes. So some of the chapters, the notes are minimal. Some of the chapters, there's like, you know, the notes, there's chapter is 10 pages long, and the notes are 60 pages long, you know, a tremendous amount of information there. And he basically absorbs from other places where he brings in other places where Hirsch spoke about it, expands it, etc. So in the letter, he uses a fairly similar phrase, and we're going to see the letter on the next page. But before we see the letter, Sir Elias writes chukim, which means edicts. Usually are considered laws which do not have a rational basis and therefore evoke the resistance of the Yetzer Hara and the nations of the world, which is a Rashi and Rebidbor, in contrast to Mishpatim, which struck us as reasonable ways of administering justice. However, the term chuk is used also in the sense of one's due portion, in Bereshis 47:22, right? And the parsha of Yigash, that the Kahanim would get a chuk from Paro. It's more uses than humans like that. Mishlei and Rehersh therefore considers chukim to be rules of justice, that which is one's just due. So the use of the word chukim referring to that which they deserve, the justice, is not so awful. That's what it means. One thought. I think there's another thought, which I saw somewhere, and I've been racking my brains for the last 3 days trying to remember where I saw it. The laws of physics are referred to as chukim. We're very comfortable with them. Why is there the law of gravity? Why does it exist? Why is there electromagnetic, this idea of electromagnetism, that electricity and magnetism are connected, and through magnetism you can create electricity? Why is it that there's some type of bond which is taking place, there's some type of attraction which is taking place through magnetism? It's not logical, but we're so used to it that that's called normal. We don't look at that as being like, wow, that's strange, why is that? We don't say like, you know, I would think that, you know, it should have been different. Baron told me that he once read a science fiction story about the day that the Congress repealed the law of gravity, right? Our Congress nowadays probably would do something like that, you know. What would happen to the world if there would be no gravity? The world would basically fall apart. Human beings would explode. What holds you everything which holds us together requires the concept of gravity. And I think that was the point of the, you know, as the world slowly unravels, is one of these horror science fiction stories. But it's a chayk. This is nature. What we call natural are the chukim. The chukim are not necessarily intelligible to us in the sense that they make sense to us, that they have to be a certain way, that this is the world we live in, therefore this is what they are. That's a metzias which the Baruch Hashem made. The Ramchal writes, he wrote a sefer called Derech Eitz Chaim. The Arizal, we have a sefer from the Arizal, which is not written by the Arizal, it was written by his Talmud Rav Chaim Vital, quoting the quotes from the Arizal, called Eitz Chaim. So the Ramchal wrote a sefer called Derech Eitz Chaim, which is an introduction to sefer Eitz Chaim. And in the Sefer Derech Eitz Chaim, he writes that we have a fascinating concept in halacha that Svara plays a role in halacha. You know, in the world of Mishpatim, even Svara is the Raisa. If the more comes up with the concept of what's the Makor and Pasuk, no, this is how Chazal saw that this is a logical thing. Therefore, this is now binding in halacha. Like, what does that mean? How does it work? you find three places in Shas. The more multiple places in Shas, the more it says, how do you know this? Yiboy Seim Akra, Yiboy Seim Asura. But the three places in Shas, the more it feels the Sura so compelling, the more it says, Kro Lomo Li Sura Hu. And so the Gemara says it's Peshos and Peshe Yitzir. The Gemara says, how do you know Peshos and Peshe? The more Ksubas in the second parak. The more says, you're a Pasuk. The more says, Lomo Li Kroa Sura Hu. I don't mean a Pasuk. Sura Hu. This is a valid halacha concept. And what's the Baraya? The more he wants to know how you know it, the Yishama actually brings a pasuk for it. The Yishama blives as a pasuk. The Baalbi says, tries to puzzle more, the dark of the pasuk, says, yeah, literally cross Svaru. And there's a third place in Shas, and more Anita, I'm not a Bucky in Shas, but Kuvager, in all three places, it says, it tells you to look at the Gideon of Shas, tell you look at the other two places. There's only three places in Shas, but the more says that lotion. So Kuvager gives you the list. So, I don't remember the Gemara, I remember Kuvager. So it's a very striking Kuvager. Like, it's an interesting point. So Ramchal says that the Baruch Hu made the nature of our minds, that our minds fit to the, since our minds are made to learn Torah. That's what Baruch Hu gave us our minds for. So giving us minds which Torah doesn't make any sense to us would be like a wouldn't work. The Baruch Hu made our minds that the words of Torah make sense to us. He says, and therefore, when we're learning and the words of Torah don't make sense to us, we have to know why. Right? If the purpose of the mind, I want to sift something, so I take something which is made for sifting. I use a sifter. Right? Someone's not made to be a sifter. It's a very horrible thing to use for sifting. It just doesn't work. The mind is the instrument. It's the vessel. It's the vehicle. It's the kli which is made to understand the Torah. So obviously, the Russian made the mind that the ideas of Torah makes sense. It doesn't have to, doesn't have to be like that. The Russian could have made all of the words of Torah, which are bets of the Bereshim's mind, totally unintelligible to man. It didn't have to be to make any sense to us. But the Bereshim made it, then it makes sense. So what happens when we don't understand something? It says because there's a klipa of tuma which prevents us understanding it, and through your harvanya, through your tefillah, you break through the klipa, and that your mind not can understand this piece of Torah. So every time you're learning something that doesn't make sense, you should know because there's a klipa of tuma blocking you. That's what he writes. Okay? I'll get involved in the klipas right now. See, he's going to write a fascinating thing that mishpatim are the piece that he says before. We'll see. You know, are the responsibilities, the due justice that another person in the world deserves. They make sense to us because we're a human being. So, as a human being, we know what we feel we deserve and we need. So the other person deserves the same respect. So I can intuit the need, the mishpatim, because I'm one of them. Right? What are the needs of plants? I don't know. I'm not a plant. But maybe if I be a plant, the needs of a plant would be logical to me. So they're not illogical. They're just that I don't have the vehicle to understand those points. Right? What are the true needs of the human body? That the body should be truly functional. What do I know? How do I know what a body is? Right? The mind is the part of the body which I know the best, because I think with the mind. So I know what mind, emotion. These are what human beings. Right? What are the needs of my toes? I don't really know. If I become a doctor, maybe I'll know what toes are about. So the Bereshit says, you know, make sure that your toes do X. I don't know. Like, so I tell you that the best thing in your body is not to eat tray for food. But okay. Maybe if I understand the true function of my body, it makes sense to me totally. I don't know what bodies are, so I don't understand why shape of food is bad is bad for the body. And the bad for the body doesn't necessarily mean in a physical sense. There are other body has the body exists in multiple planes, of existence. So it's not that the Hirsch's point is that it's not that these things, because I'll say that Moshe Rabbeinu was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu the reason for every one of the mitzvahs, all of the chukim as well, which makes sense that the Baruch Hu has a reason why he does every mitzvah. Whether that reason is comprehensible to me is the next question. And it didn't have to be that they're comprehensible. They're saying, well, I don't understand why gravity has to be. The Russian could have made a world that gravity doesn't work. You could have made a world where how would it look? It would look different. Why the Russian choose this world? He did, because he did.
Why did Hashem make my body a certain way? He could have made it differently, but he did. That question is irrelevant. But now that it's there, how does it function? And what are its needs? I can figure that out. You know, or maybe I can't figure that out. So, versus, I'll tell you what they are. So, if I'm willing to respect the needs and what they are, it makes sense to turn to the one who created them and says, you know, I think this is important. Your body needs X. I think differently. Like, well, what does that mean? It doesn't make sense to me. Like, the same way gravity doesn't make any sense to you, but that's a fact. So it's a chayk, because it's a fact. The Rosh was saying they're chukim because I'm telling you facts that you would not necessarily know otherwise. Okay. Look at the next paragraph, the second sentence. We readily understand the obligation to treat all the humans correctly, but we are not able to put ourselves in the position of lower creatures or objects, and therefore cannot easily understand what our duties towards them. These duties are called chukim as opposed to mishpatim, which deal with fellow humans. Okay. So take a look at now. Let's read an actual letter. And page 167. Chukim. The same justice that you owe to man should be shown to every lower being, from the earth which bears everything, to vegetation and the animal world, to your own body, your mental powers, your own self, that more than anything else that you could call yours. In the case of Mishpatim, the man for justice is based on the quality of all men, whereas here it derives from the principle that everything belongs to God, who represents its interests against your arbitrariness. You let do whatever you want. The person says, no, there are responsibilities to these things. The demands of Mishpatim are clearer to you because, to a large extent, you only need to know your own feelings in order to identify with the feelings of your fellow man. If you have the same knowledge of your body and your mind and the conditions of their harmonious interaction, if you were able to put yourself into the place of any other creature, then chukim would be as intelligible to you as mishpatim. The chukim require of you respect for all that exists as God's property. Do not destroy anything. Do not misuse it. Do not waste. Use everything wisely. Respect for all the species. Their order was established by God. Do not intermingle them. Respect for all creatures. They are the servants in the house of the creation. Respect for the feelings and instincts of animals. Respect for the human body, even after the soul has departed. Respect for your own body. Maintain it as it is the repository, messenger, and instrument of the spirits. Limitation of your own instincts and animal-like actions. Subordinate them to God's law, so that truly human and sanctified, they can help you attain the holy goal of mankind. Respect for your soul. The universe is tool, the body. Supply the body only with such nourishment that will enable it to act as a pure and willing messenger of the world of the spirits. Concealment of summation of the animal in you. Last, respect for your own person and its purest expression, your power of speech. So respect for the power of speech is a chayk. A fascinating thought. Okay. Now just take a look over here, this next piece, which I'm not going to read all of it. I just think it's... So you see the flow from Mishpatim into Chukim is a very logical flow. The next section he refers to as mitzvahs. The second requirement of life, which is page 173, 172. So Rabbi Elias gives in a synopsis of the 12th letter. Justice means not hurting anybody or anything. Love, in contrast, means bringing blessing upon others. Mitzvahs are designed to develop in the person the spirit of blessing so that he will then give to others and the community in that spirit. So mitzvahs are the same kind of life which gives its completeness as love. Not only must you not bring harm upon yourself and your surroundings, but you must seek to become a blessing to yourself and those around you by emulating Hashem, who does all these deeds, his deeds in love. Become a blessing to yourself, so you'll be able to be a blessing to others. Equip yourself with all the possible capabilities and resources, garner goodness and ability, and then give yourself to the world around you, serving God by bestowing your blessing upon it. Okay, so the first step is you have to make yourself equipped. So he says, respect your parents, revering wisdom, age of virtue, seeking enlightenment through the Torah's wise, learning Torah, staying away from Ra, endeavoring to perfect your inner self, etc. And that's the first half. The next half on the page, on page 174. Now, for loving to bestow blessings upon others, your first half is the education of your children. Bestowing blessings and love is beyond the boundary of home. You are required to save a person's life, property, happiness, suffering animals, from the devils of your fellow member, using your capabilities and possessions, use your property to help the poor, clothe the naked, feed the hungry. So all these go into what he calls, talks about the importance of you must join the forces of the community, the local congregation, the state which takes you and protects you. All these go under the concept of mitzvahs. We're now creating the fertile ground that I can become something more than just, I'm not messing things up, I'm respecting the justice which everything is due, but I'm actually becoming a source of bounty to the world. That's his flow. I think it's an extraordinary piece. Now, going back to the Chari part of it. So, the first one of the Chukim is Baltashkas. You can't waste the world. You can't destroy, you can't use things wantonly. Paragraph 397. Do not destroy. No, but the language is translated in English, but it's from the German. So the sentence is about like the whole paragraph long. If you ever read the. Do not destroy anything is the first and most general call of God, which comes to you, man, when you realize yourself as master of the world. All around you, you perceive earth and plant and animal. Earth and plant and animal already bearing your imprint from your technical human skill. They have been transformed by your human hands for your human purposes, dwelling places and clothing, food and instruments. You've taken them as your property. Thus you stand in the midst of your earthly kingdom, and they are all the servants of your might. It's my land. It's my animals. I own it. I control it. I control its destiny. I can do whatever I want with it. If you should now raise your hand to play a childish game, to indulge in senseless rage, destroying that which you should only use, we should destroy that which you should only exploit, you should regard the beings beneath you as being objects without rights, not perceiving the one who created them, therefore desire that they feel the might of your presumptuous mood. Instead of using them as the means of wise human activity, Hashem says, no, do not destroy anything. Which means, only if you use the things around you for your wise human purposes, sanctified by the word of my teaching, only then are you a man and have the right over them, which I have given you as a man. If you destroy, you have no right. I lent them to you for your wise use only. Never forget that I lent them to you. As soon as you use them unwisely, be the greatest or the smallest, you commit treachery against my world, you commit murder and robbery against my property, you sin against me. That's Baltashkas. So Baltashkas is, don't cut a tree. Right? Don't waste food. Baltashkas is that the world belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's not yours. You're a guest here, and the Baruch Hu is lending the property to you. So that's the haskola of the thought process. It's a tremendous thought process. It's a foundation. A shoyel has the right to use everything out of the item, and if during the process it wears out and it becomes useless, he's potter. Meisim Achalosa is potter, but he can't destroy. Only the Baalim can destroy. The Russian says, "I'm the Baal HaBas. You're not the Baal HaBas. You have tremendous dominion. I lent it to you. You can do whatever you can do anything which you want, which will further the growth of mankind." Because that's a valid use. 398. Therefore, the sages have says, he who in his wrath tears his clothes, breaks his vessels, scatters his money, should be in your eyes as one who has worshipped idols. For this is the way of the Yetzer Hara. Today it says, do this. Tomorrow it says, do that. So it leads him to become to idol worship. And in truth, there is no one nearer to idolatry than he who can disregard the fact that things are the creatures and prayers of God. So he's put himself on the pedestal. Well, if I can do whatever I want with him, that's what is there. I'm not worshiping an idol, I'm worshiping myself. I put myself on the pedestal. I'm the owner of the world, not God. So, okay, I'm not actually bowing down yet, but I'm on my way. That's what the Mor is saying. The person who, in his anger, can tear apart a baggage, like, what are you doing? Oh, you're the Baal HaBas of the world. Uh-huh. You're on your way to Budazor. That's how we see that in Chazal. Now take us a step right there, and then that was chapters 56. In chapter 62, is the issue of suicide, self-injury, self-ruin, and self-preservation. Limiting our presumption against our own body, God's word calls out to us, do not commit suicide, do not injure yourself, do not ruin yourself, do not endanger yourself, do not weaken yourself, preserve yourself. First one, suicide. The life of your neighbor stands before you as a sanctity. You may have to shred the frame of your brother's human spirits. You may have to tear the bonds. You cannot scare it away. Why? Because life has sanctity to it. You're not the Russian put it there. You have the right to take it away. So next page. Would you not recognize the same extent in your own life? Will you not respect the bond tied by God in your life as in His? You would destroy your own frame and flee from the earth to which God has sent you before God summons you away? You have no more right upon your own life, upon your own body, than you have upon your brother's. You're destroying God's temple. You're exterminating God's creature. You are a murderer, whether it be yourself, whom you murder, or somebody, or your brother. It's just that the language is powerful. There's the presentation. Like, you're destroying the creature that the Russia made. What's the difference who it is? Whether it's yourself, you don't own yourself. Okay, now, that's the first point he says. Down on the bottom of the page, he adds another thought, which I think is very powerful. Is it not self-deception to think that your suicide is a crime only against God and yourself, but not as a crime against your fellow creatures? Was even a small part of your being, a fragment of your power, meant only for you? Do you not have the duty to become a blessing unto the world and everything and with everything? His point, the mitzvahs are that we become a source of toiv to the Bria. I owe that to the Bria. I can't take that away. Do you not belong to it with your whole being? Were you not born for it when God called you into existence here below? And do you not deprive the world of its justified demands upon you when you destroy your existence here? Okay, tremendous point. But the person sits back, but you stand alone in God's world, no bonds of love, friendship, or blood tie you, another being to you. You are this loner which nobody cares about. Nobody cares if you're gone. It's only these then that have a claim upon your beneficent activity. Is not everything which bears God's stamp? Is not every man whom you can serve? Every animal that you have and can preserve? Every tree that you can guard? Every earthly creature to which you belong? You're Meshuvah to the whole Bria, not just the man even. Your responsibility to everything. That's the whole point of Chukim. That you have a responsibility to every animal. You're a steward of the world. And you, and not just in the sense of not damaging it, but being beneficial to it. Okay. Paragraph 428. But not only may you not rob yourself of your life, you may not even cause your body the slightest injury. You may not ruin your health through carelessness. You may not weaken yourself by abstinence from that which is permitted. You may not willfully bring yourself into danger. You may not lessen your powers through an irregular way of life, or in any way weaken your health or shorten your life. Only if the body is healthy is it an efficient instrument for the spirit's activity. Therefore, even the slightest unnecessary deprivation of strength is accountable to God. Every smallest weakening is a partial murder. You should avoid everything which might possibly impair your health. You should not risk your health except when God demands it. You should not rely on a protective miracle of providence unless a familiar duty makes it necessary.
How about the first thing?
So fasting is Chazal say a person who undertakes tainus is a chayte. There's also Chazal says it's a kaddish. Right, so you have to understand what the balance is.
What's a kaddish?
Kadosh.
Oh, kaddish.
There's also Chazal says it's a chayte. Right, so a person who's weakening himself through the process of fasting is not looked upon as something favorable by Chazal.
So there must be a purpose to it then.
When we're called to, right.
So this is talking about for no reason.
Correct. It says unless the fulfillment of the duty makes it necessary. If you have a fulfillment of duty, which means that the Bereshit is expecting you to do something in certain cases. But the general attitude is that we need to maintain maintaining our health is not just quote-unquote a mitzvah, it's understanding that we're not the balavos of our body. Bereshit owns our body. Bereshit has created us with a responsibility to the world. So, if as much as we have responsibility to make sure that the vehicle, which will be the Hecha Timsa to give to the world, is taken care of. Right? I take my car in for regular oil changes because I need my car to work. I take care of it. Right? So my body also needs to work. I have to take care of it. It's a responsibility. I can't just, you know, disregard it. But that message says that I understand what my relationship with my body is. I'm not the balabas. I'm the balabas, so that I can rip up the bag and I can do whatever with my body also. So I don't have to take care of it. I'm not in the mood. But that's not what we're here for.
This message, when a person does something that they are chayav misa by the according to the Torah. So what does that mean in these terms? You know,
you say in regards to what
it's a crime to take your life. It's everything that you owe to the world and to yourself and to. You know, but a person's chayav misa.
Can a person take take his life in the process of tshuva for an avera?
But even just conceptually, like, what's the idea of putting someone to death when they've committed a crime that the Torah says is a chayav misa? When we talk about the value and the purpose of life, and
there are actions which. Well, okay. I mean, the one answer is life doesn't end when a person dies. There's a value to life beyond that, right? So, as much as the Bereshit is saying that there's some actions which require the person to be taken out of this world because he's damaging others, damaging himself, whatever the situation might be. You know, the Ben Tzur Mara is taken out because he's damaging himself. He's hurting himself. I mean, we have to stop him. Some of the only way you can stop somebody is by whatever you have to do. But that we have a that being said, there's a tremendous dagesh in the Chemiras Kanta Misura concept that you can't take a chance. The human life is extremely valuable. Pikuah Nefesh overrides all the mitzvahs come out. We have Chiyuv Misa, so you understand what it means, Chiyuv Misa. Within the Torah's value system, you understand that Chiyuv Misa means it's really, really bad, because, like, if life is so valuable, so the fact that there are certain times we say, take a life, it has to be tremendously significant what the person has done. Okay, so that's the Rav Hirsch's building the concept of Chukim. So, I think in this thought process, Yovan's thought process, they put man on the pedestal. The philosopher being the quintessential man because man's mile is ability to think, and therefore a philosopher because he thinks is the best man, and the goal is to the purpose is. So man will subjugate the world. He'll understand it. And through understanding something, it becomes, he's taken, as it were, the rights to it. Because as much as I understand something different, I have power over it. I can do whatever I want with it. The modern society, which puts science on a pedestal, and man is going to basically control everything there is in the world, is the expression of that thought process which started with the philosophy of the Greeks. The whole yusad of chukim is mamish, is the antithesis of this. It's that it's not, man's not on the pedestal. Man is a vehicle. The idea of in ancient Greece, a child was born with a defect, was killed. Because there has to be a certain beauty, a certain form, a certain, right? But we have a right to take human life for something which, you know, doesn't fit into my picture. Right? Like, there's What's the modern version of that? You have this the world of abortion, or the world of, and the world of abortion, and the world of euthanasia, and the world of. But what's the final? I think that what tells me the past thing was, what's the final result of that? When you put man on the pedestal, so the end of it, the person becomes self-serving. The final result of that is not that man is valuable; that man is valueless. Because it's hard to find value for a man when he's one of 7.5 billion people. But if man's purpose in life is to serve those 7.5 billion people, he has the value of the whole world up in him. If the man's value is to serve himself, how valuable can he be? I don't care how special he is. He's one of, if you do your ratio of how valuable he is compared to the world and compared to all the animals, like, okay, yeah. So he's here today, gone tomorrow. The value of human life, the bottom line, the value of human life is only possible when we take man off the pedestal and we put him as serving the rest of man, serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu, serving a role, serving the Bria, that he's as valuable as the Bria. So each person has the role that they have to play. But without any of those pieces, when I look at an army and I say, well, every part of the army does their job, the final result is the army accomplishes what it has to accomplish. The value of each is Zayin Yochel, Zayin Yochel. The Morris says, in this case, Zayin Yochel, Zayin Yochel, both are Kayev, because each one did it. The Morris said, you do part of Malach, you're not Kayev. So if it's Zayachal, it's Zayachal. If I could pick up without you and you could pick up without me, we pick up together, we're both part of it, because each one did a half of Malach. But if I can't do it without you and you can't do it without me, we pick up together, we're both Kayev, because each one of us did it. Each one is held responsible for the full result. So if I'm part of a greater reality, everything which is accomplished belongs to me. If I'm by myself, so as much as I actually accomplished belongs to me, nothing else. How much did you really accomplish? How much really is yours solely and only? Nothing, or very little. So the diminishing of the value of man is the final result of Yahweh. It's the exact opposite. So it reminds me of a thought process I think we spoke about once. There is a gorgeous explanation of the purpose of Sefer Shmos is called Sefer Agula. We spoke about this. It's fascinating that the Latin names of the books are much more matim to Chazal's names of the books than the names which we use. We call Bereishis Shmos Vayikra the Worm. Chazal referred to them as Vayikra is Teres Kahanim, and B'Midbar is Chamesh HaPikudim. The Worm is called Mishnah Torah. And those are the Lashonos of Chazal. The Sefer Shmos is called Sefer Agula. The Ramban calls it Sefer Agula. Other Mephoshim refer to Bereishis as Sefer Yetzirah. Okay, so look at the Latin names. Genesis is Yetzirah, is creation. Exodus is Gula. Leviticus is the laws of the Levites of the Kahanim. Numbers is Chamesh HaPikudim, and Deuteronomy is Mishnah Torah, the second law. So I don't know why we call them these names, and they got the right names, you know. Like, I don't know, but the Sefer Shmos is called Sefer Gula, the Ramban writes. So the Teres of Ram, Rabbi Avraham Grodzinski, he was the last Mashgiach of Slobodka, Hashem Yikum Dom, he was killed by the Nazis in Yimach Shmoy. So he has a Sefer Teres of Ram, which it's a phenomenal Sefer. I can tell you, it's such insight and understanding of things. He's also a little bit more well known to us by his sons in law. He has one son named Rav Shlomo Volbo, one son in law named Rav Kreisworth, one son in law named Rav Yom Kamenetsky. There's a few nice sons in law that the three of his daughters survived the war. Maybe one more daughter also. And he and his rabbis were killed by the Nazis. So he writes the following. He says, so why is Parsha Shmos in the Sefer Agula? Shmos is not about Gula, it's about Golos. Right?
So he has a Gemara in Sanhedrin. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that there was a discussion between Antoninus and Rebbe. At what point does the Yetzer Hara enter into the developing child, the fetus? Is it from the moment of conception or the moment of birth? So Antoninus asked Rebbe, and Rebbe said, from the moment of Yetzira, the Yetzer Hara enters into the child. So Antoninus said back to Rebbe, "Im kein b'epi mevo yotze." He would push and he would kick out and come out. Rebbe said, "You're right. It's Mishas Yitzio, and the pasuk that's the pasuk of the Pesach Chatas Rebbe. It's in Parshas Bereishis that by the Pesach of the Rechem, that's when the Chatas Rebbe. That's when the Yetzer Hara enters the child." So he says, "Let's think about this Yetzer Hara." So the Yetzer Hara comes to the fetus and says, "Why don't you kick through the mother's wall and go out? Like, well, you know, what's the sales pitch? What's the Yetzer Hara selling, right?" Because I'll say the Maran Nida says that there's no period of a child's life where he's in any or a human being's life where he has any level of goodness compared to what he has when he's living in his mother's inside of his mother. Because I'll say that he's able to see Mesevelo at Sofai, Behilo Ne'ar Ale Roshi. He's able to see the whole world. He learns of the Malach all the Torah. He all the physical needs are taken care of. He's safe. He's warm. Everything. He has everything. What's the sales pitch? Okay. Now, if the child comes out early, medically, the doctors can explain to you there's certain parts of the if they don't change, if the child's not ready, it comes out early, the child cannot live. So he starts to listen. Here's God. Here's one. Here, everything you want. It's one of the perfect. You go out, you're gonna die, and let's do it. Okay. So the Mar says, "Yeah." He listens. It's like, what's the sales pitch? The sales pitch is over here. You're dependent and you're confined, and out there you're independent and not confined. And that's it. That's all Yetzer Hara says. So, you're gonna die from it? Yeah, it's worth it. Like, you talk to a teenager, like, you know, and then, you know, says, you know, don't do this. It's bad for you. Kids said, "Listen, if you wouldn't have told me, I wouldn't have looked as bad for me. Now you tell me, I'm going to show you I can do whatever I want. I'm going to do it anyway." Like, that's what they think, right? And then some of those are the same way, right? But, like, what's the Yetzer Hara? The most basic Yetzer Hara in the world is, I want to be independent. This is the Yetzer Hara which came to Adam Rishon. So, Adam Rishon, my friend, you want to exist. You want to have existence. You want to be real. Well, as long as you're dependent on the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you're not real. When you take that step and you become the one who makes your own decisions, then you're real. That's the sales pitch. Because the most basic problem we have is we're not really real. The person created us. We don't have our own existence. And we want to exist. The most basic need, the most basic instinct of a human being is self-preservation. I want to exist. See, Sarah says, okay, I'll help you exist. When you go and forge your own path, now you exist. Until then, you're dependent. That's a sales pitch. You're going to die? It's worth it. The reality is the opposite. When you take the path which is given you, and therefore you're a part of the person's reality, you're part of a true reality. When you take your own path, you're nothing. It's a moment what we're saying. Geula is the process which Klaisel is going to come to the point where not that they're just free. That's not the point of Geula. Geula is that they have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and they're going to fix the Avera of Adam Rishon and commit this relationship and therefore become the Rishon's nation and have the Rishon's name on them, which means they're part of that greater reality. They got to learn how to subordinate themselves first. So we're going to put them through the process of Avdus, because that's what's going to teach them the lesson of being able to subordinate themselves. The greatest title, right? The Rishon is coming and he's saying a hesped on Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rishon comes to Yeshua, the first beginning of Sefer Yeshua, Moshe Avdi Meis. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rabbeinu of the Rabbi of Klai Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Torah down to Klai Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu led the Klai Yisrael for 40 years. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Tzenes Baal Chesed, took care of all the needs of Klai Yisrael. The greatest title of a man is he's an avid. That's the Rishon. He wants to take Moshe Rabbeinu's godliness in one word. This is the Rishon's hesped on Moshe Rabbeinu, as it were. He's coming to Yeshua and saying, "Listen, Moshe is God. Not Moshe, my avid is God."
The avdus is the ability to, because when you're an avid to Kadosh Baruch Hu, you become yad avid kad rabbi. You become part of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then you're part of a greater reality. That's what a person is saying. The chukim are the world when we're becoming avodim. We're becoming avodim to the responsibility to the rest of the world. We're becoming in service of the world. We therefore become part of a greater reality. And the Yetzer Hara of Yavin was exactly, they didn't like that. They said, well, we need to feel that we are our own, that we create our own destiny. We decide. We're the boss. That has created a society where the rate of suicide is whatever. Because what value, how much are we worth? We live in a society where the value of man is becoming less and less and less and less. They're chipping away in every single way. You know, the sanctity of life is gone. You know, the doctor's all, you know, he's the, what's the quality of life, you know. Right? Euthanasia is legal already in many countries of the world. In some states are contemplating abortion. But more than that, like people walk around feeling that the computer, artificial intelligence is going to take over everything man can do. So what are we? We're left with nothing. What value do we have? We're living in a society which we have no value. So Chanukah is the time where Klai Yisrael steps back and reaffirms that godless Adam, that Klai Yisrael represents Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the mankind in general is a tremendous bria, tremendous. But the way you do it is by understanding that you are a part of a greater reality of the Baruch Shalom and the Baruch Shalom's bria. I'm a little cog. If little cogs would talk, and you open up your hood and you hear the little voices saying, like, what am I? I'm just a little cog. It's like, what am I, a little cog? The reason why the car goes is because you're there. I'm just a little cog. Well, yeah, but without that little cog, the car wouldn't go. So that little cog becomes extremely valuable. I had this experience. My transmission went on one of my cars. It's a $2,000 job. What happened? When you put the car in park, so there's a little metal finger there in this cog, which is holding it in place. So the whole weight of the whole car is on this little piece of metal. Well, that little piece of metal shears off, and it's inside your transmission, and it starts going around and ripping everything else out, and eventually you have metal all over your transmission, nothing's going to function. Of course, I learned you put on a parking brake, you take the pressure off the little cog, so therefore, that's the purpose of the parking brake. So it takes the pressure off of it. So I live, my driveway is like this, so it was even more lesson I learned. So that little piece of metal, which is that long, about not even as wide as my finger, cost you $2,000. What's the matter? What's the word? It's the car. It's my whole car function based on it. Or not. So what am I? I'm a nothing. If you yourself, all you are is yourself, you're talking about, maybe you are a nothing. But that's how we define ourselves. We define ourselves as part of it's self-deception to think that it's only a crime against God and yourself. It's a crime against your fellow creatures. You belong to the world. The whole world is expecting blessing from you. The whole world is expecting benefit from you. The whole world is getting benefit from you. Do you understand exactly how? What? You have to figure out. You have to find out. So, of course, you're valuable. So I think Chanukah is a tremendous reaffirmation of the value of each yid. And whereas Yavin is the one who seems to be claiming the value of man, putting man on the pedestal, we're putting Kadosh Baruch Hu on the pedestal. I think the reality is the exact opposite.